Welcome back. This podcast is scheduled for one fall.
One fall!
With a 60-minute time limit coming out of the black corner to come out and weigh to 666 pounds, I'm your boy Xander Hobbs. This is...
Bobby.
It doesn't matter what your name is!
B.
And once again, we're bringing you another edition of the... Wrestleocalypse.
It is upon us.
This episode is recording from the Carrington Manor.
Top, all right. Top. Who shot JR? I don't know. But we're going to find out what's going on in the latest edition of, like you said, the Wrestleocalypse. And what are we going to start with? There's only one thing to start with.
We're starting with the Dynasty pay-per-view by AEW.
Yes. Booker Tony Khan comes out swinging with a monster card. Some dream matches, or at least one dream match, I guess.
Right.
So let's start with that one. It was definitely the match of the night, in my opinion.
Easily. I mean, this is the thing is, I know I've been on TK about like not having a story that like doesn't have the match or whatever, but this match was good. To me, it didn't need it. It started off hot. And they started off the match wrestling and stuff, and then they got into everything. And there was just some like hard hitting shit going down on this match. I mean, a lot of reversals, just like lots of like trying to counters, trying to get into their moves, like lots of matches for the setting up for the Hidden Blade. Danielson tried to stretch that arm too, but it was awesome. Like one of the spots of the match was like, I forget, Ospreay came up for the Os Cutter. And Danielson hits him with the Psycho Knee. I think I sent that clip to you. I thought that was incredible.
It was insane.
And then, like, towards the end of the match, you know, the Gotsai gets fish hooked into the label lock, but then Ospreay hits the Hidden Blade into a Tiger Driver, and then Danielson starts selling the neck, which Bobby does not like.
I mean, he just, it's like, I don't know, it's a little much.
It's not the first time he's done it, but like I think this is their way of getting it into a second match because I don't think they're done. I think this will be probably a trilogy of matches, and I'm not mad at that. Danielson seems to be running his own show and he's not doing any storyline stuff. He's just doing matches. So, I mean, which I'm cool with. Like I this is the exception that I'll make with these guys. Like would I like to see Ospreay in the bigger thing? But it's fine. He just signed. So I'm not really too worried about it. But it was the match of the night. People are already saying it's a match of the year candidate. It's early in the year. So we'll have to wait and see. Just, you know, we can't be sucking each other's dicks quite yet.
No, but there's a chance that Ospreay could have like the three of the top five matches of the year, the way things are going.
I mean, the guy's just really good.
Yeah.
I can't say enough about the guy. And especially after he changed his character and got bigger. I know you can check the archives. We said it before and I'll say it again. The guy just like, he's maximizing his potential of what he can do in the ring. And I don't give a fuck what other people say about him no selling and doing this. It works for this guy and it works for the matches. I'm not saying everyone should do it, but it works for this.
And he doesn't always no sell. It's right. Not like, you know, it's like he's still, you know, I don't know. I think he's really the complete package. Still super athletic. The move sets there. He's willing to get brutal. You know, hard hitting matches are kind of becoming his specialty. So it's really good to see good to see them go at it. Jesus. And the crowd was so hot. They didn't even get a shit. They before they even came out, they wanted to do all of their oohing and aahing and their all the fan stuff that they like to do.
Exactly. You know what? I got to bring this up because Bobby sent me the matches the day of the pay-per-view and they weren't in order. And I told him what the order should be. And Bobby has the receipts on his phone to back this up. I went 5 for 5 before I missed a match. So the matches I got mixed up were the ladder match and Timeless Tony. But like, other than that, I went five for five. It was cool. I should be booking this shit probably or arranging the matches. Who knows? But it was a banger. The opening match was Pac and Okada, and that opened the show. I really like both of these guys, and we all knew Okada was going to come out on top. But it's just like, what does that do for Pac? He just got back from injury and he does a job. And like what Bobby had a good reason being, they just wanted to see the top guy that can go, one of the top guys that can go against Okada that was available. So I understand kind of, but
yeah. And then they want to start the night off hot, right? Like, I think that's something that AEW does pretty consistently.
Yeah.
You know, so they, you know, they weren't going to start with the whatever that thing with House of Black was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that I don't want to spend too much time on the trios match. It was a match like I didn't really give a shit about.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's why they put Okada first.
Right.
Which was good. And like, you know, they're probably trying to get some of the East Coast views that may die off. But I think with like, if you're going to tune into this, you're staying until you got to the BD and Will Ospreay match.
Right.
You know,
I mean, we have a new TBS champion with Willow Nightingale. Unfortunately, I think she's going to be a transitional champion because that's going to go to Sasha Banks when they wrestle at All In. I wish Willow would have a better run, but it looks like they're putting all their chips in Sasha Banks. So that's what I think. So.
Yeah, but hopefully they have a good feud. Maybe it's a match or they get a couple of big matches out of it. It's still a lot of good exposure for Willow.
I know, but like I think she's been one of the high points in the division. So I just don't think she should just be holding it to drop it to, you know, Sasha Banks, but that's like what they're gonna do, I think.
Yeah, and at the same time, she's been rewarded for being one of the high points of the division. She is strapped.
Right.
Take them both. I agree though. Probably one of the ones I didn't like was the FTW championship with FTW rules. And I mean, we know we're very, very popular, but it was crazy how many people joined the Wrestleocalypse and booing Chris Jericho.
Yeah, they were shitting on him. Like there was Fozzie sucks chants, there's please retire. And to Jericho's credit, he was taking a lot of heavy bumps that like a guy that's up in his age shouldn't. He hit a top rope hurricanrana. The crowd still shat on him. I mean, I got to give props to Jericho for bumping like he did. I don't understand what the why the outcome of the match, what it was, if he was going to put Hook over. But the thing is, Hook's not even over. Like, you know, they're trying to get the yay boo spot. But like, I think people were just more, they wanted to boo Jericho and not cheer Hook. Like they were just there to boo Jericho. So like Hook was kind of like the odd man out on here, and whatever he was doing wasn't really getting a reaction. So I don't like this storyline. I don't think Jericho has like the rub of Jericho anymore. You know, I don't think it's a big deal. So I don't understand why they're stretching this out. But I mean, that's probably all the time I want to spend on that.
Yeah, man. The Bucks, first three-time tag team champion.
Right.
Put on quite a match with FTR. kind of put in a weird spot, though. Kind of weird place where they put it.
Right. I mean, I don't think they had it. I think if they would have switched that with Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa, if they put Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa before the main event, I think that would have been good. But then there were so many must-see matches, so somebody had to be somewhere on the card. And this match with the Bucks and FTR, I thought they had better matches in their series than this one. I liked it. It was good. But I think this is more like a vehicle to like get over the Bucks' new heel persona. And that's pretty much what it was there for. The story of the match, though, is that Jack Perry made an appearance. Bobby, good call. He had that one. We'll see what he has to go during that. I mean, the heat was loud for him, kind of loud for him during the match, but we'll see if it's sustainable. I'm assuming he'll be part of the Elite. That's what it looks like, right?
Yeah, it makes sense, right? I mean, they got to round out their stable.
Right.
So they replaced Hangman with Perry, and they replace Kenny with Okada, and maybe we see the reuniting of Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, former AEW tag team champions.
Yeah. I mean,
take on the Elite.
Yeah. I wish Kenny Omega the best in the speedy recovery, but you know,
I do too.
He's missed on the show, honestly.
I agree. And, you know, I've been seeing a lot of his older matches. Like I sent you that one that popped up on Reels, which was like
the Golden Lovers.
The Golden Lovers. Yeah. And that was just insane.
I mean, Kenny Omega
is just, so good.
He's really good. He's one of the best to lace him up. And it's a big blow to AEW that he is not here for the indefinite future, because you know, diverticulitis is nothing to fuck with. Like, you can die from it. So I mean, a speedy recovery to the Omega Man. But what we have to get out of the way is that we have a new AEW world champion, Swerve Strickland. I think that we all kind of assumed that he would be taking the match, or we wanted him to take the match. I thought the lead up to all this was good. Joe was a good champion. And I think it's time to, like, you know, test Swerve out and see how he can do. I think they have like a match set up for him whenever Hangman Page comes back, because Page wants to like do that. And Page was slowly turning heel anyway. So, I mean, he's got it set up. And I thought it was a good pay-per-view. Like, for the majority of the time, the right people won.
Yeah, it all made sense. They filled out the card. There was a lot of really, really must-see matches, like you said. The Thunder Rosa, Tony Storm match, Danielson, Ospreay, FTR, Bucks, Swerve versus Joe. You had the TBS Championship, Julia Hart and Willow. And then, you know, like the Pac and Okada, like right there is awesome. And then,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know, Edge got beat up a little bit, so that was cool, I guess. I was going to say, overall, solid pay-per-view. Not their best, certainly not their worst. Probably definitely one of their better booked ones, I would say.
I agree. So, we'll have to see what the fallout of that on Wednesday tomorrow will be. And you'll just have to listen to the next episode.
Yeah, man. I wouldn't watch it. I would just wait till we talk to you about it.
Right. For sure. Yeah, definitely. So we got to go on to the other company right now, the WWE. We can start off with SmackDown. We have a number one contender for the Undisputed World Television Galactic Championship, and that's AJ Styles. And I believe that we said that he would be the one. So
right. It just made sense.
No, yeah, it's too early in Cody's run to catch a face versus face thing, you know. And, I mean, we'll see where LA Knight goes. I think, you know, he should be in the upper card. I'd like to see him go up against Logan Paul for the US title. I think that would be big for him. I think if he was the guy to de-strap Logan Paul, that would be good. Because I am tired of that guy holding the belt. Other than that, though, this is the main thing that I'd like to get into. What a beatdown that Kevin Owens caught at the hands of Tama Tonga and Solo. Bloody, real bloody. Nuclear heat. The crowd was booing the shit out of him, and that's what the segment was supposed to do. The look on the wise man's face looks like Solo's gone rogue, because these doesn't look like it's being called from Roman Reigns.
No, and then some social media afterwards, he basically alluded to such life will be forever different on the island of relevancy.
Exactly, and I read on I read some rumors that Jacob Fatu can be making his debut sooner than later. So they're saying as soon as SmackDown, and that's Friday. And if Jacob Fatu's in, man, this is going to be cooking, like, real good. Like, because we love Jacob Fatu. And I think, if I'm just going to put my fantasy booking glasses on for a minute, that The Rock is the one calling these shots from above. So that when Reigns comes back, if Reigns comes back, then he's going to end up joining up with the Usos to take on this new bloodline that The Rock has created. And then don't know.
I mean, that makes sense. I just hope they let this cook for a while, man. Like, let the bloodline beat up other people. Let it, like.
No, that's what they have to do. They have to gain as much heat as possible, because these are guys like Solo Sikoa, who's still fairly new, and Tama Tonga, who basically is an unknown when you introduce him to the WWE crowd. Let's just say that most of them don't know who he is. So they need to do some dastardly shit that like they just did on Friday, and they need to keep doing that. Keep beating up and bloodying people that the fans like a lot, and that gets them major heat because The Rock's gone for a long time, and so is Reigns. So like Bobby said, let this shit marinate.
Yeah, man, and keep them away from the Usos.
Right.
Keep running this shit back. Like, have them establish themselves without dragging the Usos back into it. Like, let's focus on how good that long-term storytelling was and how all of this is still, all of those matches are there.
No, I know. They're going to be there.
So there's no reason to rush them.
What they need to do is just keep piling on the heat, but that keep having Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa just keep gaining heat and just keep doing shit like that. Cause I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because there's an art to bringing somebody in with instant heat. Right. Yeah. But I think the challenge with that is like maintaining that heat and not having them die too quick, you know?
No,
because at some point you can't just beat people up all the time.
No,
there has to be some sort of like character development, some sort of something else. There's theater involved, damn it.
Yes,
you know. But
that was
and then Monday Night Raw was eventful.
Yeah, it's just for all the praises we've been singing with H, and so. We get a new women's champion crown, world champion crown with a fucking battle royal. Damn. Lazy. So lazy. Especially the fact that like
can't even get a tournament out of this?
No tournament. There's only three people that could have won it. And then you give it to Bex. That's like the safe thing. They just played it safe. I mean, I would have liked it if they put the belt on like Chelsea Green or something and had her get squashed or something like that. Or you know, or do something different. This is supposed to, they keep harping on that this is the new era, and then they strap Becky Lynch. Like, I love Becky Lynch, but like, what good does that do the division?
Yeah, I saw some take online that basically somebody was like, this is perfect. They have to have Liv Morgan be like super unhinged. And I'm like, no, they don't. I think Liv Morgan as a character is pretty good where she is doing her revenge tour. Like, I don't think we need her to like be crazy and unhinged, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, and here's the thing, Becky Lynch gains nothing and loses nothing by being a transitional champion.
No.
So, you know, if he's, you know, it's lazy because they're trying to buy time without writing anything and trying to probably gauge. They brought it probably if the crowd went crazy, I could imagine them like, all right, we're going to roll with Becky for a while.
Right.
And I don't think the crowd really went crazy.
No.
So
it was lukewarm at best.
Yeah.
And I like I said, this is coming from a fan of Becky, but I think if a time was to do something different, that was it. And it wasn't to strap Liv Morgan just yet. Like they need to keep her like, you know, until mommy comes back and then they can deal with that. But injuries
happen. Strap her before mommy comes back. So mommy comes to get her belt back. Like,
right.
But Liv Morgan, I don't think, has the legs to hold the title for the length of
that's
injury recovery like that.
No, I agree. There was a World Tag Team Championship match between Awesome Truth and DIY. I got to say, I like these new camera angles while they're being introduced. I think that it looks cool. I mean, I might be the only one that thinks that, but I thought it was cool. Like, Awesome Truth retains, and I don't know, like the crowd doesn't seem like too hyped for DIY. So they teased a split already.
Teased a split again.
Yeah, again.
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 I mean, we're getting into Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn territory.
Right. Here. And I just don't think the crowd is all for DIY, which sucks because they're really good. I like them, but it's just like it's crickets when they come out and that's never good.
It's all right. There's always NXT.
Right. And then last thing about this that was notable was Gunther threw his hat in the ring for King of the Ring, naming the hat for King of the Ring. And so did Drew McIntyre, I believe, or Sheamus, one of those two. So that'll be the new thing coming up. New Day, we get a New Day in Imperium match, which is always good. I like their contrast of styles and their characters. And then they put on good wrestling matches. New Day wins, and then Kaiser turns on Giovanni Vici. So we got Imperium down to two. I don't know where this leaves Giovanni, but like he was always the odd man out compared to Kaiser and Gunther. So
yeah, I didn't see this segment, but I did see catch something on my news feed, and it was like somebody was telling it. I think Sheamus, it's like, you talk about banger after banger after banger. Looks like you've been eating burger after burger after burger. Yeah,
I saw that too. And like, but Sheamus had a good comeback too. He was like, I can lose the fat, I can lose weight, but you can't lose stupid. So I thought that was good. Like, it was a good segment between those two. Those guys have history. So I'm not mad at that. And I'm glad Sheamus is back.
Yeah, and they got to do something. I don't know. Maybe we'll look back at this and be like, you know, and see on episode 500, we'll talk about the Drew McIntyre Dark Side of the Ring episode and like his COVID reign, and then he never could get traction after that. Right. And eventually, you know, he goes down the road of all good Dark Side of the Ring stories. But it's just weird. Like, he's got everything, right? Yeah. Like, I think he puts on good matches. He's done well with his heel shtick. Like,
no, he's checks all the boxes. Like, Drew's great.
So
I think
maybe
if rumor's correct, like he's supposed to be, they want to strap him at Clash at the Castle. So I don't know where that leaves Damian Priest, but I don't know. Drew will get his moment. I'm sure he will.
Yeah, definitely. Overall, solid week on the main programs. Little odds and ends. It was nice to see one broken Matt Hardy returning to his roots.
Yep.
In TNA, not to be called Impact anymore, but TNA wrestling, broken Matt Hardy. Very cool.
No, that was cool.
Love that shtick.
And then also too, speaking of returns, the Death Machine, Sami Callihan returns. Thumbs up, thumbs down. So we might have to be talking about TNA a little bit because they've got some good peeps on there. I know they lost the Machine Guns, but they got Matt Hardy back. They got Callihan and they got Nick Nemeth. I'm sorry. And then I like Moose. So we'll have to cover them more. I know I've been getting requests to cover more TNA, but like we have to stick to, this is a 60-minute time limit.
Yes, indeed it is. And so we are winding down the first half. We're going to come back on the second half. Cool shit. It's what we're always waiting for. Until then, why don't you listen to this sweet tune?
Once again, we are back with your favorite segment, my favorite segment, Bobby's favorite segment, Roger's favorite segment, and Ebert's favorite segment. What do we like to call it?
Cool motherfucking shit.
And no matter what, cool shit always starts off with
the motherfucking meatball.
We got a good one too. Got a good one.
Get
right into it.
All right. The first one comes from James Beard.
The guy who gives the awards out?
I don't think so.
No, not that James Beard?
No.
All right.
But still a good name. All right. I love the new design of the World and WWE Tag Team titles. I thought the previous iterations were hideous. I want to know what you guys think of the new titles. And what are your favorite titles of all time? I don't know enough. I don't pay that much attention. Probably the classic one is the one I remember the most. I'm talking Hulkamania.
The Winged Eagle title. That's yes. what it's called. Yes.
Yes. And then I do really like the IWGP, the one that Moxley just got. I know.
So you like that new design, huh?
It looks, yeah, it looks like a little demon fae head or something. I hate it.
Just compared, just because I'm used to the old one. The old one was nice to me. My favorite titles, I like the old IWGP title. I like the big gold belt back in WCW. The Winged Eagle title. And then the Attitude Era title was cool. And then there was a little bit of time where they had the Undisputed title before they went into the spinner belt, and then that's where it just went all downhill. But I love the new titles. I think they're great, especially the WWE tag titles. They look old school. But yeah, I mean, I'm just glad they don't look like toys anymore.
I can agree with that. Although there are plenty of dudes with their toys at every show.
And like I said, if we see you with a belt during a show, you have to defend it right there.
Yeah, right. All right. I'm already thinking about just taking fools out at the next
show. If you see me and Bobby and you're wearing a belt, prepare to get 3D'd right on the popcorn stand.
100%. And after that, you know who you'll be calling? You'll be calling Dr. Love, who gave us this awesome question. I can't recall the source, but I read an article that when Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase Jr. were tagging, Ted DiBiase Jr. was supposed to be the one to get pushed to the top, but it obviously didn't work out. Why do you guys think that was?
He just wasn't that over. He was boring. He had the look. He wasn't bad in the ring. He's just fucking boring. And to be fair, Cody Rhodes during that time wasn't that great either, like personality wise. He didn't start getting a personality to like dashing and undashing and stuff like that. Those were really great. But he just didn't get over. And that sucks when you have like the lineage like that. Those are big shoes to fill. The Million Dollar Man was like spectacular. It always just brings me back to like when you are a legacy wrestler, yeah, you get your foot in the door a little easier, but you have huge expectations that a lot of people can't match. Like, not everyone is Randy Orton, and not everyone is Cody Rhodes, or like The Rock, you know, or Roman Reigns. I mean, it's just like for every Roman Reigns, you have a David San Martino or a David Flair. And it's just like sometimes it just don't work out, especially when you're like the offspring of a legend in the business. I'm not just talking about like some wrestler. Like, Ric Flair was a legend. Dusty Rhodes was a legend. Ted DiBiase was. So it's just like those guys, just because you're the son of them, like, doesn't mean that you're automatically going to get it. Curtis Axel, Joe Hennig, that's Mr. Perfect's son, you know, couldn't get over. It happens.
Yeah. And then you look at, I mean, yeah, it is. It's hard. It's a lot. They're big boots to fill, you know? And it's like sometimes the foot in the door, you don't actually develop the skills you need to be successful later on.
Right.
When push comes to shove, right?
No, right. You know,
and Randy, also I would agree. There's only one fucking Randy Orton, dude.
Right. Those guys don't, guys like him don't grow on trees. Like, you know. And that guy did some scratching and clawing himself, because like he was almost one wellness violation, or like, you know, one, he was like a bad apple at the beginning, and he's matured a lot, and he's one of the best. So, you know, not everybody gets
it. Yeah, he made it difficult for himself so that he could learn those skills.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the problem, though. That's like just wrestling in general, man. You have to be a three-dimensional performer. It can't just be in the ring. It can't just be a good character. If you're just a good character, you can be a manager, right? If you're just good in the ring, you're going to be boring. Exactly. And you're going to be on dark episodes or, you know, whatever. So you need all of it.
You do.
All right. Next question comes from Orlando's in Bloom. I find it weird that the majority of the IWC is constantly praising Triple H since he took over creative. Do they not remember his constant politicking and burying of wrestlers throughout his career? I feel Triple H still has his own agenda, and I don't trust him when it comes to this so-called new era.
Oh, man. Man. This is more like a venting session than a question, but it's fine.
I mean, I'll take it. Like, who, what run did Triple H, who is your favorite wrestler that Triple H
ruined,
buried, yeah. Right? Like, that's what that sounds like.
Were you a Goldberg fan? Is that what happened? God. Like, or were you, I mean, I was pretty hot about the Booker T thing, and I knew Rob Van Dam, like, was, I had a lot of momentum, but like, I mean, this is wrestling, dude. Like, Triple H, guys like Triple H and Shawn Michaels and Hogan and Nash and Hall, yeah, they all politic. That's what they did, you know? And Austin did the same thing. Like, so it happens. And the thing is, Triple H has done, in my opinion, has done way more good than bad, you know, especially right now. So we just have to, like, kind of, like, forgive him. I feel like, and not come at him like he kicked your dog. So...
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing, too. It's like, you know, I mean, the work they've done with NXT, especially Shawn Michaels, the way that Triple H has navigated pretty difficult circumstances, finally coming kind of into power, if you will. And I think the reality is, like, the reason they could politic is because they really only had to convince one person. And if you got Vince on your side, you got pretty much whatever you wanted, right? And if you were, but now this is much more of a business. And I feel like that really helps keep things tight, you know? And Triple H wants to stay as the booker. I mean,
he's doing a good job. So I can't be mad at him for something that happened like 10 plus years ago.
But, yeah, and if his agenda is to remain the booker, then he has to keep booking well, and that's good for everybody.
Absolutely. See,
Tony Khan's, his number one priority is not to keep his job. So, hence questionable booking. But we did, like I said, check out the first half. You'll get our full recap of the Dynasty pay-per-view. All right, our favorite question submitter, our inquisitor almost, if you will. This is Gavin from Metalocalyptic Sunrise. This was a previous question on a thread. If you were to replace two bands with the big four of thrash metal, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax, who would they be and who would be the bands you would replace them with? Anthrax, and I would put Lamb of God in, and that I didn't even fucking think about that one.
You have to replace two bands.
Lamb of God's maybe not exactly thrash. What's up?
You have to
replace two out, though.
Yeah,
if I take two out, then it's Slayer, and I think then it becomes more difficult for me to choose one that could fill those off-key solos of Kerry King. And it's got to be a thrash metal band.
Yeah, it's got to be a thrash metal band.
I mean, well, like,
go ahead.
No, I was like, I'm thinking of like some Phil Anselmo side bands, but like, they aren't exactly thrash metal. They're like,
no, because like Superjoint Ritual is like more punk.
Yeah.
And Down is more like stoner metal. Like, so that's not going to work. I mean, I'll just go tell you what I posted on this thread. I got rid of Anthrax, replaced them with Testament. And then the second band that, because I've always, even before this question on the thread came out, I've always said that like Anthrax should be replaced out of the big four because Anthrax is overrated as balls and the guys are dicks. So, and I know that from experience. The second part was a little bit more challenging. So Anthrax gets out, Testament's in. I can't, as much as I have a toxic relationship with Metallica, I can't get rid of them because those are the guys that got me into like the thrash metal and like got me to pick up a guitar. So like, I can't get rid of Metallica, and Megadeth is off the table. Like, they're staying. So I got to get rid of Slayer, and I'm replacing Slayer. I don't remember what I said exactly on the thread, but I think I replaced them with Sepultura. Gavin, correct me if I'm wrong as you listen to this. So I replaced Slayer with Sepultura. With Max, not this new Sepultura. So my big four of thrash would be Metallica, Megadeth, Sepultura, and Testament.
There you go. I like the Testament.
Yeah. Testament severely underrated, and they should be getting, they should be more in the conversation than they are. But Bobby sticks with me. He's replacing Anthrax with Lamb of God. I'm cool with that. I'm not throwing any flags on that one. I think he wanted to hear your bands, though. That's why he wanted us to do this question. But great question.
Yeah, always love like, music questions. Yeah, I'm just, I was, I don't know. The thrash metal, I'm not like a huge, it's just not something that takes up a big chunk of my library, my catalog, if you will.
No, fair. It's fair enough. Like, that's the shit that I got started on, like, when I was a kid. So, like, I know a lot about,
I feel like that's the shit that they played on Headbangers Ball. At, like,
yeah, they played a lot of, MTV, they played a ton, right? Of, like, thrash on there. Like, because that shit was popular, you know? Like,
I mean, that was like, what they were doing. Play faster. Yeah, play faster.
There's, like, Exodus and Overkill was a popular thrash metal band. I mean, there's Havoc, Sodom. You know, you could go down, I could go down the list, but I'm not going to bore you with those. If you guys want to send in your questions about wrestling, metal, sports, anything of that sort, you can get at me on Instagram. That's Xander Hobbs, XANDER_HOBBES. Same thing on Threads. Bobby, where can they find you?
Wrestleocalypse on the Threads and the IG machine. It's spelled like it sounds, but you already know that because you're listening.
All right. So we have our match of the week. And I found this on my feed really quick. It's from a promotion called TNT Wrestling. And it has the former NXT UK champion, the Bruiserweight Pete Dunne, going up against the Aerial Assassin Will Ospreay. This is before Ospreay put on the weight. So he was still like in his high flying, you know, more so. What did you think of this match?
I love it because I'm a big Butch, Pete Dunne, Bruiserweight fan. One of my favorite moments was when he fish hooked Ospreay and then like took pose down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because sure. that reminds me of like things that would be done in the past. It is awesome watching the beta version of Will Ospreay.
Right. You know? I like that, the beta version.
Right. And it's like he was good, but they realized, like, you know, he really kind of, I would say, like, you could tell why someone like Cornette wouldn't like his style of wrestling.
Exactly.
Like, there was a bit of choreography and stuff. Now that's like none of that shit.
No, his final form is incredible. He's like a fucking Pokemon that's evolved. And like, it's just, the guy's turning into like one of my favorites. Like when he was, before he evolved, I always like, dude, the guy's great. Like I didn't shit on the match with Ricochet. He's awesome. But like, he really separated himself and like, cause you know, like how Roman Reigns talks about there's levels to this shit. He's right. And like Will Ospreay went to another level, like right now, but it's just always cool to see them back in the day. I know it wasn't too far along, but like, him and Pete Dunne are two wrestlers that are completely different, and the match was spectacular. I can only imagine what those two would do right now.
Yeah, it would be awesome. And like, Pete Dunne is such like, he's just got a lot of facets to his game. You know?
Yeah, he's quick. He does all the like stretching and all the holds and stuff,
fingers,
like that.
All the
fingers and all the joint manipulation that they like to call it. It's just really fun to watch. And I'm glad that match came on my feed because I wanted to do something with Will Ospreay before this one. So just to like compare and contrast. So you can find this on YouTube. It's on TNT Wrestling. Just type in Pete Dunne versus Will Ospreay. If you don't know who we're talking about, if you're someone that likes good matches, check that out for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And check out some of the other stuff they have on this TNT Extreme Wrestling channel. It's crazy. They have 327 videos, not a lot of subscribers. We've got Walter versus Joe Connor versus Jordan Devlin. I went down the rabbit hole a little bit, so I just want to give him some props.
Jordan Devlin, is he wrestling? Is that JD McDonald's?
Oh, I think it might be.
I think it is that because it sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, this Jordan Devlin versus Ophidian thumbnail, that totally looks like him. So
yeah, he's not a hard guy to miss.
No.
But now we got to move on to our Fast and Furious second half segments. We got the award-winning Get Rid of One next, and I believe you're up to task, Bobby B.
Yes, I am. And let me bring up my notes. We're sticking with our age-themed brackets. And this one fantastic. Was hard, and I really tried to spread the wealth, but in the end, I had to come up with these four, and they all are on. They're all superstar. And so of these four, we're getting rid of the best over 40, age 40 active wrestlers. And we're going to start with the one and the only. We talked about him, the Viper, Randy Orton. Right off the bat, hard to beat. Number one seed.
That's hard to beat right there.
Number two, though, depending on if maybe you weren't really into like the mainstream stuff. Maybe your guy is Prince Devitt, Finn Balor.
Ooh, he's over 40.
Career. He was very popular, you know, and he has a pretty awesome catalog of matches and, you know, different iterations, which I like. Or you want somebody with some titles on their waist right now. In that case, we got to go with formerly known as Senior Money in the Bank, but Damian Priest, who I like. Put an asterisk on this. I think really probably came in. He's the best he's ever been at age 40 plus. You know, I think he's 42 going on 43 now.
He's better than he was as Punishment Martinez when he was in ROH. So yeah.
Yeah. Yes, he is. And it's crazy, really, like that match in Puerto Rico with Bad Bunny and that whole thing, like it really fucking helped him out, man.
Oh, for sure.
And then lastly, I got to go with another highly decorated wrestler, both at home and abroad, and that is Asuka, who even at age 40 plus is still getting the job done in the women's division.
So these are 40 plus wrestlers, and we're picking the best one.
Right. Yeah, because you kind of have to. That's the way we've done it. But we'll have a little bit of discussion because it's hard to beat Randy Orton. Right. It's like,
yeah, dude. Like Viper, dude. It's hard because, I mean, you had an interesting picks, like different from what I would have picked for 40 plus wrestlers. But there's a lot of them, and this is year one, so like I'm not.
There's so many of them, and that's when it gets hard. Yeah. And then, are you picking greatness? Are you indexing the form what they've done in the past versus what they can do moving forward, right? Because yeah. I could have put Kofi in here.
There's so many people you could have put in. You could have put in AJ Styles. Like, you could have put in, like...
The Miz?
Miz is over 40?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Shinsuke Nakamura?
I'm picking Randy Orton because he's had, like, the most complete career. Like... I mean, Damian Priest is still cooking. Finn Balor, and it's no fault of his own. He never could hit that. He never could. He always had a ceiling over him. And that's not his fault, though. Like, it's not his fault he got injured. And then McMahon just gave up on him. And Asuka, she's always been done dirty. But, like, she's had a great career out of WWE, and she's had a good career in WWE. They just always seem to do her dirty, but I gotta go with Randy Orton, man, just because of like everything, like just how many iterations he had of his character, how many titles he's held, how he's like, you know, been on top even when he's shitted on, when the crowd there was a time when the crowd did not like him and he still worked in stride. Like, I remember those years. So and the guy is still can go through all his injuries and through his age, like still can go with like the top. He's still like, it could be a top guy.
Yeah, man. He looks awesome right now. He's jacked.
Yeah.
Like, he definitely rehabbed and came back with some extra meat on his bones, maybe to protect that fused back. But it's crazy. I mean, there's a lot. 40 is 40 strong. 30 is going to be crazy.
Yeah, 30 will be crazy. I'll remember to do that for like.
Maybe we should just do like a 30 is going to be enough. We could probably do like a small bracket.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'm going to make a note of that. But we watch other things besides wrestling.
Yeah, we do.
I'm going to get into yours because I haven't been watching much. So,
okay. So 24 and 24, a new cooking show. Clock runs 24 straight hours. It's hosted by Iron Chef Michael Simons, one of my favorites. They have rotating judges come in. So they basically, each episode is a shift, 3 hours. They have contests. They do all these different things. And they just keep cooking 24 hours. They've got some pretty famous people, some people we've seen in TOC. Carlos is on it. They had, I can't remember her name, but just, the, you know, it's a good mix of up-and-comers plus established chefs. They've had Jet Tila as a judge. So, yeah, real good, real fun show. Just another little twist on the cooking competition format. Also, new season of Ugliest House in America just came out, which is one of my favorite funny shows. It is fucking crazy, the type of shit that is out on the great US of A. Not to give too much away, but they went to this house in Ohio, and it literally had an ensuite kitchen where you open up what looked to be a closet door. You walk from the bedroom into a full-on functioning kitchen. Like, hey, boo-boo, I need to get a snack. Boom, ensuite kitchen. Like, I didn't know I needed that, but if I won the lottery, I wouldn't tell anybody, but there would be signs like my ensuite kitchen. So that's really funny. We've been enjoying that. And then Betty Rebel started to watch this popular show, Baby Reindeer. And I guess it's on one of the, I think it's on Netflix. It's streaming, but she ended up turning it off because it was a little too much for her. So,
okay.
But that seems to be hot in the culture these days. And then some disappointing games of basketball have been watched, and that's really about it, man.
Yeah, oh yeah, I watched some basketball. Nice. I watched the Mavericks get smashed, and that's about it. And then
then I decided I didn't really like basketball that much.
And anyways, I was done with it, and I was just watching the Knicks a little bit, and they'll get probably
smashed. That was an exciting end to the game.
No, that was a good game that they had. That was a buzzer beater. It was cool. It's just hard to watch basketball now, but I'm not going to get into all that. I mean, I just hope the Mavs make it past the Clippers because I hate the Clippers. So that's been one standard. That's been the constant is my disdain for the Los Angeles Clippers. It really feel like throwing up when I say that they're from Los Angeles too.
I know. Well, soon we'll just call them the Inglewood Clippers.
Right.
That's where they're going. Yeah, but we are also watching the Top Chef / Last Kitchen.
Yeah. So this has been a good one. I mean, so we got the people back from Last Chance Kitchen. They are letting two chefs back in. The yes. One dude that was there from the beginning that worked his way up. And then I forget what her name is.
I do too, but she had a disastrous team competition.
Right.
Where her and her partner just could not get on the same page.
No.
It was for the Frank Lloyd Wright challenge. Then they go and they have to battle it out. She beats the other Chicago chef, and then she gets to go up against Sue, I think, right? S-O-O Sue.
Uh-huh.
And Tom, which I hate, they're doing this too often these days. We're not sending anybody home. Everybody gets to stay. But it just, you know, I always love when the new person comes back when it is a new person who comes, because everybody freaks the fuck out. Like, holy shit, who is this person? What's going on? And now the show's going to really, I think, heat
back up.
It's going to
pick up. It's going to pick
up. I liked the Supper Club thing.
Yeah, that was interesting because I had never heard of that before. So that was an interesting thing to learn. And it was a good challenge. There's some front runners right now, but like, who knows what's going to happen when you turn this, when those two come in. And then we still have Restaurant Wars looming, and that's my favorite part of the show.
The show doesn't, it's like, what is it? The playoffs don't start until the home team loses or whatever.
Right, exactly.
It's like, dude, Top Chef doesn't start until Restaurant Wars.
No, yeah.
People that... fucking fall apart and they can't.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like, it's more than just cooking, you know? Like, it's like, they want you to be an all-around chef, because I think a lot, the main goal for a lot of these chefs is to own their own restaurant. And like, there's more to it than just cooking good meals to running a restaurant. You can have you can have the good food, but if you have poor business acumen, then like, shit's going to fall apart.
Yeah. Attention to detail, you know, just all the front of the house, like, you know, going out to eat is experiential. If you,
right.
if you don't want the experience, then you're just going to go to a food truck or get some shit delivered or order. You know, when you go out, you want to have that experience. And I like how they kind of force it on him in such a fucking brutal way.
Right. James, by the way, quick subject change. James Harden's a bitch. Like, I'm watching the game right now while we're recording, and he did that Reggie Miller thing, like where he kicks his leg out to draw the foul. That's just like bitch shit.
That should be an offensive foul. They're supposed to call.
Yeah, they did. That they called defense because they're fucking at the LA Clippers stadium where they shouldn't play.
Yeah. But they have to try to cover up all the glory of
the Lakers. All the Laker banners.
Yeah, but it's cool. They're tied going in the fourth, and Luka's the bomb. If they steal one from the Clippers, they're on track for sure.
Yeah, they need to win this one tonight, though.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. All right. So we're in the gorilla position.
We are.
We were watching Top Chef back in the locker room, but the pyro set. We're about ready to go on for the main event. What are you coming out to, my man?
Oh, man. I've been wanting to use this track because it's coming up on my feed a lot. And I just love this band. They're called Ginger, and they're from the Ukraine. Really awesome band. They have a female vocalist named Tatiana. I can't pronounce her last name, and I don't want to butcher it. But she's really good. Lots of cool screams, lots of nice cleans. They're on the progressive tip. Too. So this album is from 2018. The album is called Cloud Factory, and the song is called Outlander. And it's really dope, really heavy. Check it out right now.
It's been million years, and yet this bomb is my shelter. Hardly had I opened my eyes, I joined their ranks. Colors are faded away, sound suspended delay. Hey, mother, tell me where is my home? I don't belong to the spies, nor to the slaughter, nor to the sky.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for this to be on the playlist, and it's ever growing. I was listening to the other day. It is fucking awesome. I know we say that about all the playlists, but we have good taste in music. What can I say?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I found out about them. They had I think I was going down the rabbit hole on like Drumeo or something. I don't know how it came up, but they have a song called Judgment and Punishment, where it's kind of like these reggae, she has this reggae vocals, and then she's like, it's pretty incredible. So awesome. Glad to have them in the fold. A member of the Wrestle Clips family now. That's awesome. I also decided to come with something a little bit harder than per use, maybe, but a little bit older. This is from an album put out in 1981, the year I was born. And much like me, it is titled Killers. And of course, I'm going with the song Killers by a band called Iron Maiden.
Wheat, the good song.
Killers.
Yeah, I love this. I had to bring it back. I hadn't listened to Iron Maiden a long time. And I think Run to the Hills maybe came on. And I like Number of the Beast. And that album is very strong. Don't get me wrong. We've been featured some of the songs on this playlist, in fact. But there was a time when I wanted to be just a little bit different. So like there was a time when I thought like World Needs a Hero was my favorite Megadeth album, which was obviously mistaken.
Right.
Temporary insanity. That's fucking insane. Like, come on. But this one still is probably like my favorite Iron Maiden album to listen to. And so I had to go with it. Glad we both came hard on our walkout music because neither of us are gentlemen.
No, not like our gentleman that we're going to feature today on Inside the Ring, who goes by the name of Chris Adams. Now, I did not know too much about Chris Adams back in the day, except for that he trained Steve Austin and he was the guy who invented the super kick. So those are the top two things we're going with right now. But his story was pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, like he almost choked a guy to death because like he was late.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, some pretty fucking hardcore shit, man. You know, definitely bad family life, you know, basically moved to LA and then had a kid. It was basically broke up like almost immediately, it seemed. But, you know, in a way, it's like, it's just another cautionary tale, man.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much of a Jekyll and Hyde this guy was, though. I hate to use, like, you know, terminology like that, but like he was just like a completely different person for that. And I'm not like exaggerating. That's what pretty much all the people that said that were on the show said. Like he just turned into a different guy. And what's crazy is that he had a hard, he was really good in the ring. And this is what we talk about, like that it, you can't just be good in one thing in wrestling. You have to like show all three boxes. You know, you have to make people care about you. And he did when he was on the circuit, you know, but when he finally got a shot at WCW, I think his time had just like passed. It was a different time. And, you know, he wasn't able to like, you know, reach that so-called brass ring that everybody tries to get that goes into wrestling.
Yeah. And he ended up like the whole GHB shit and like, you know, I don't know. To me, this was one of the more manic ones, man.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And like to tell you like how his life ended, which I didn't realize how it did that way. Like he was in a drunken rage and he was in a fight with his friend, right? Wasn't he choking his friend? And his friend out of self-defense shot him and he died.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy Blu-ray had already like, he had told him he didn't want GHB in the house and everything.
Right.
And that's like, yeah. And then it's like, what could have been, you know, like he's credited with this stuff, but his demons and his substance abuse and all these other things. Like, it was just, to me, this was like a very melancholy, sad episode. Like,
right. And they said at the height of his like career, you know, he was in a tag team with Gino Hernandez, who is another guy that we covered. And they were just like, they were on top of the world, like, you know, doing their thing as a tag team. And, you know, this their lifestyle outside of the ring, like so many other guys during this time period got the better of them. And like, we still don't know how Gino Hernandez like really died. People say it's an overdose. People say he was whacked. I don't know. But it's just like, that shit was a whirlwind in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, like, especially then those times, because those guys were pretty much like rock stars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's amazing that anybody made it through, right?
Exactly. Like, you have guys like Mick Foley telling stories that, you know, and it's crazy like how that shit passing by. But it's like when you're messing with substances, their schedule on the road, the physicality of it night after night, like the body
women.
The body can only handle so much.
Yeah.
And we have the next episode we're going to cover next week is going to be on Sherri Martel, otherwise known as Sensational Sherri. Some of you guys might know from back in the day, so that's going to be a good one. But on that note, we can't top that.
No, we cannot.
And we're always reminding you to show empathy, protect the environment, defend animals, support the WrestleOcalypse.
Booyakasha!